It's Wednesday, July 15th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 156 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 56 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Ash, and I am a slave.
Okay, Chad. My name is John.
My name is Pat, and I am not a slave.
And my name is Chris, and I think I'm in the wrong podcast.
Welcome to Fear the Boots Mentally Special Edition.
You guys are just unfamiliar with the classics. That's your problem.
Isn't that every episode?
Mine.
So what classic is that from, Chad?
Army of Darkness.
Is it really?
Yeah. My name is Ash, and I am a slave. I've been here for blah, blah, blah months, and it goes on and on.
Oh, when he's at S-Mart.
Yeah. I guess I just don't. I didn't remember the slave part.
My geek cred's really weak, and I don't get your common geek references.
No, I'm usually pretty good when it comes to obscure movie quotes, but that one went right by me. Nicely done.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Let's get down to what really matters. Power 16-2. This is the championship week.
Oh, yeah, baby.
But you know what? I'm not going to put the poll up this week because I want to be able to announce who the finalists are and comment on it. And since we're releasing a week ahead, I have no idea who the finalists are. So
and we don't want to see you put your poll up anyway.
Yeah. So this week, my poll will be down. So if you guys go out to the site, you can still do other cool stuff like sign up for the Gen Con Gorilla events or get
them. Yes.
Yes.
Or hop on the forums. But there will be no Power 16-2 poll until next week, so we can actually announce who the finalists are.
You know the Gorilla events?
Yes.
I hear we're up to 40 people.
Good. We're still coming. FYI, we've had some minor technical issues. One is I'm just now finding out that iTunes has us about 2 episodes behind, so I have to bitch at them about that. The other thing is apparently
So by the time you get this, it'll be fixed. It'll be an issue.
The other thing, though, is WordPress has apparently been dorking up some of our links. I post them as absolute links, but it internally fixes them to relative links.
I don't even know what that means.
Well, what that
and I don't care.
What that means is if you go to feartheboot.com and you click on the show notes there, everything will work properly. But if you're clicking on the show notes in your aggregator, none of them are going to work. And so I will do my best to keep an eye on that. But just fair warning, if you've had trouble up to this point voting in the Power 16-2, getting signed up for Gen Con, any of that kind of stuff, I am doing my best to fix those links. But if they don't work in your aggregator, go to feartheboot.com. The links all work perfectly there.
Yeah, I'm a total RSS noob, which is really sad. I mean, I read a lot of webcomics. I don't listen to podcasts, but I read a lot of webcomics. I pull news from different sources. I go to a lot of different web pages. I really don't do the RSS feed. I actually do it the quote-unquote old-fashioned way of the internet. I actually go out to the individual sites and click on links and read articles instead of have them pulled into me.
Don't feel bad. I do that too. You know, the reason why I don't do that, I tried RSS stuff and it kind of became a little bit too overwhelming for me. I felt an obligation to look at all these articles and there was no way I was ever going to do that. So I just kind of let it go. Hey, Dan.
Yes, whoa. Chris.
There apparently is a new MechWarrior computer game coming out.
No way.
And how bad is this going to be?
You know what?
Well, you're going to have to do up, up, down, down, left, right to do the PPC blast.
It's now a console shooter.
Oh, my God. You know what? I would totally play a Street Fighter-style Battletech game. Where you have like a Warhammer and a Battlemaster, all 2D, and it's just like, round one, fight! And then it's just like, gee, oh man, that would be awesome.
That would actually be pretty cool.
Battletech, in terms of computer games, died for me the day that I played it. What was the game? It wasn't MechWarrior, it wasn't Mech Commander. What was the third? Mech Assault. The day I played Mech Assault, and here's my Battle Mech running around by itself, picking up power-ups. From that day forward, electronic Battletech was forever dead to me.
Well, but
go on, Chris. What do you know about...
I liked Mech Commander,
I have
though.
To say that
that was sort of the real-time strategy.
I understand why they did it. Absolutely. Because there are two kinds of people who are going to buy this video game. There's the very, very tiny, tiny, tiny market that has actually played the tabletop game.
Right.
And then there's the huge overall video game market that's looking for power-ups in a cool game.
I understand why we dropped the A-bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I understand why.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? it was still an atomic bomb made of two cities.
Yeah.
Games have been going in one direction, and that is
dumb.
Simple, console-friendly, dumb. They've gone too far. Look
you
at Deus
why?
Ex 2 versus Deus Ex 1.
Because
Deus Ex 2 sucks, and everyone knows it.
Sell.
Well, yeah, and there but is a you niche. Can kill the goose that lays the golden eggs.
There, I agree.
And I think
agree.
With Deus Ex 2, they did it.
I agree. That was a terrible game. And I think that squeezes out some games. But there are two things with that. One, there's niche games that come out, like from Team Ninja, that do the Ninja Gaiden series, that are so hard it makes your eyes bleed and you cry. It's so the difficulty level is just so immense
cried yet,
on
but
that.
I'm sure I could.
Yeah, I mean, the difficulty level is so immense on it. Whereas you have the other end of the spectrum, something like Bioshock, which when you figure out that you have infinite amounts of respawns...
And you respawn with mobs damage how they were.
Yeah, and so you could run into a room with the big boss that you did 2 points to. You can do another 2 points, and then he kills you, and then you run into the room, and you just keep pecking at him. Then the game is so incredibly easy, but guess what? The game is still fun. Because it's not the challenge that is making the game fun.
I think there are two different axes that we're talking about. I think you're talking about difficulty, and I'm talking about complexity.
Yes.
There are simple games that are difficult. There are complex games that are easy. I am bemoaning the move from complexity to simplicity, not the move from difficulty to relative easiness, has also happened.
I am absolutely on the same page as John. For anyone that has a long history with these games, it was the difference between MechWarrior 1 and MechWarrior 2.
Well, you know
it's
why?
It's the difference between TIE Fighter and, you know, Star Wars Battlefront.
Well, I feel like I'm like imparting wisdom of things I absolutely know nothing about, which is kind of what Fear the Boot's all about. I'll tell you why that is now. Why games are getting more simple and less complex.
Because you could put them on a console?
Yep. Because PC gaming's dying. Yeah. That's all there is to
it. And once again, it's like war. I understand why it happens. I understand its necessity. Mm-hmm. I can't argue with its necessity.
I can't wait to get all the mail.
Absolutely
it's like,
nothing.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
Console games are so complex!
Oh,
console games are so complex! It's like, no, they're not.
With the level of animation technology they have, if they made a turn-based console game that had really cool animations of what your turn outcome was, I think that would sell.
Yeah. Let's compare the complexity of Civilization 4 with the complexity of Civilization Revolutions. Or what was that console dumbed down?
Colonization.
Colonization was PC.
They did an Xbox release.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. The one that had Napoleon and two or three other guys on the cover, and they all looked kind of cartoony.
They actually turned Civilization into an arcade game.
Actually, I'm expecting mail on a different topic, which is my commentary about war and the atomic bombings people are going to take as political statements instead of my dry humor. And so I'm waiting for the... Anyway.
No,
getting back to the original point.
You wouldn't have said it if you don't want people bitching at you. You like the attention.
He does.
He's smiling. He's trying not to smile.
I'm only
now.
Smiling because if I could, I would edit that out. And there's no way I can and leave the conversation intact. So I'm just like, F it. I'm just going to brace for it because people are going to take that to mean something I didn't mean.
I've known you for 30 years, and I know that you wholly 100% support and endorse the murder of millions of innocent civilians in wartime.
Absolutely.
That is what Dan Reppinger is all about.
You name it, though. You know what? People take our comments any way they please. I've been called too conservative. I've been called too liberal. I've been called anti-this. I've been called anti-that.
Well, you are anti-that.
I think Reppinger, isn't that Portuguese for mass extinction?
Masturbation? What?
No, mass extinction.
I like masturbation better.
I know, but I'm talking about the word definition, not what you prefer to do.
Extinction.
All right, so Chris, real quick, what do we know about this MechWarrior game?
All I know is that this company called Piranha is putting up numerous little preview videos on YouTube, and I've seen a few of them, and the animations, of course, look pretty good, but obviously that's not a dictator of gameplay. Now, who does my dictate, by the way?
I wondered about that, too. I think you're going for indicator, but hey, who's counting?
You know what I really wish they would do is stop working on this MechWarrior game that's just going to piss me off and instead work on an updated Crimson Skies game sophisticated multiplayer.
Do you remember way back in the day Crimson Skies came out? And of course, Dan and I are big FASA fanboys. I don't think we bought it.
No, we never did.
We never bought it. We flipped through the books and looked through the box set. And we're like, wow, what a crappy role-playing game. But, and we both said this, this would make the best video game ever. And they came out with a video game, and it really sucked. But then later on, when technology improved, they came out with an Xbox game that was absolutely wonderful. Xbox One, it was just a really great game.
That is a
multiplayer,
very fun game.
And it was just like this sort of action, art deco, sky pirates sort of thing. I guess it would be called, sky pirates punk? Or
I don't know. I'm
prop plane punk? Or
the only thing I'll say about that game is I thought the ending sucked. Everything up to the ending was cool.
What happened at
the ending was just so anticlimactic.
You save the girl and you kill the
bad
guy. Yeah,
well, you kill the big blimp and then it's just over.
Well, you want to kill another blimp?
Well,
I mean, there's only so many bad guys in the game.
And there's only so many blimps.
I know, but everything else in it was just so...
And then you could play it again, only on a harder level.
That's true.
And then multiplayer was great, too.
Chris Daly's dead.
I don't know. Hey, I guess I'm weird.
You know what's cool about it, though, is that you can download it off of Xbox Live for your 360, and you can play the multiplayer over Live, and there are still occasionally people who play it. And so you can actually find a multiplayer game. The problem with it is that I found is that I never played it back in the day. I downloaded it and played through and I'm like, this was great. Let's get on multiplayer. And I contacted a friend of mine and he was playing it too. And we're like, okay, I'll get online at this time. You get online at this time and we'll create a game and then we'll get into it. Well, I create a game. He was 2 or 3 minutes from getting online. And the moment I created the game, it was like somebody had an RSS feed or a, you know, they got a page on their phone where it's just like, oh my God, someone made a game. Get it.
Left 4 Dead does that too. People, for God's sakes, we've had game lobbies that you can find and join for like 15 years now. Just keep to it.
Well, and these people that join the game, I was like, oh, that's so awesome. There's people I can play with other than my buddy, and that's going to be so neat. Well, the people who are voraciously looking and checking to see if there's games of an old Xbox One video game that had kind of a niche market are people who are really, really f-ing good at the game. I mean, outrageous South Korean level good. And they just roll in and smoke you. We played several rounds and then they left. I got the impression that they got bored chewing up my buddy and I and kicking our asses so horribly. And that was another one of those experiences I thought I was actually pretty good at this game until I played multiplayer.
I've never done that. There have been games I've been good at and games I've been bad at. There have been games where multiplayer I've pulled off some unexpected victories. For example, that battle in Command & Conquer 3 was between you being John, me, and this guy named Mike, and everybody expected me to lose and I actually won. But I have never played a game so long that I have been like the super ninja skill level. Yeah, where if you put me on some ladder climbing system at a tournament, I'd be gone in the first or second round. I mean,
do you know that there's classes you can take at some colleges on StarCraft? How to better micromanage, how to improve your Zerg rush.
And, you know, that's really stupid.
You know, there's real money to be won, though.
I guess, but so, anyway,
I wouldn't do it. But
I'm hemorrhaging IQ points. Let's get to role playing games.
You want to hear my Crimson Skies Brush with Greatness?
Yes, I do want to hear Crimson Skies Brush with Greatness.
I played the game when they demoed it for the first year they demoed it.
You're talking about the role playing game?
I'm talking about the tabletop.
Okay,
tabletop war game of Crimson Skies, one that came in the box. And so I was there at the demo for it. When you played the demo, you got registered to win a leather, you know, flight jacket with the Crimson Skies patch on there.
That'd be pretty cool.
It's very cool because I won it.
Nice.
I was not the first person drawn because you had to be present to win, but I was the second name drawn. And I got it, and I had to wear it because I couldn't fit it in my bag, so I'm wearing a heavy leather jacket in 80-degree weather in Milwaukee, but it was still wonderful nonetheless. And I still have it, and I still wear it today. It's a great jacket.
Nice.
Is it roughly the same color as your assless chaps?
Well, no, because my chaps are assless, and are you going in the color of the chaps or the color of my ass?
So we were joking about assless chaps at work the other day, and somebody brought up the point, which totally killed the joke, where he's like, aren't all chaps assless? We're like, well, yeah. And so like, well, he's like, well, why do you have to say assless chaps? Why can't you just say chaps? Like, because saying chaps is boring. Saying assless chaps is funny.
It's right up there with why do we park in the driveway and drive on the parkway and why do you have a hot water heater and blah 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 and what do you put in a toaster and
what
so
do you put in a toaster?
Well, the toaster kind of makes sense because it toasts.
Well, I know, but you ask most people what do you put in a toaster
and a cold water heater would not do anything because it wouldn't heat up.
I have a
well, but that's why it heats cold water.
I have a
you don't
water
need to
heater.
Heat hot water.
hot water. I always thought of the hot water heater as saying the water heater is one thing.
There you go. And then I have a water heater.
The water heater is hot. That's how I always thought of it. Park in the driveway and drive in the park. You know, I might.
Who the hell says
what's
park
the grammatical
anymore?
Term for that? Because there is an actual. It's not palindrome. It's not that. But what is the grammatical term for those things? There is a term for it besides just American English. That was for Lord Fowl, by the way.
I don't remember.
Yeah, unlike other countries that don't have their own strange linguistic idiosyncrasies and
stuff.
You
such. Know, we did determine on the forums, and our forums are fantastic, by the way, so you should sign up for them. We determined on the forums that the British have an unfair advantage in Scrabble.
Because, I read that thread.
Yeah, well, yeah, they do.
Because they can put U's extra everything. U's in things and get more points.
Yeah.
Well, but then they end up with a lot of Q's that they can't do anything with, because we at least are holding on to that U, which increases yeah. our chance of playing a Q.
Yeah.
They've already spent it on labor. Dude, I'm holding it for quick.
In current editions of Scrabble, the QU is just one piece.
Oh,
I
is
think it?
It
is.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It I have is. Seen that.
I guess, I don't know, we had the Cold War edition or something.
When our Q's, back in our day, Q's and U's were separate.
A version I always played growing up, the U was its own piece.
Yeah. Well, the U is its own piece as well, but you just get an assumed U with your Q
now.
Well,
no, the Q is its own piece as well. Huh. So, all right, anyway, role-playing games.
No, more Scrabble.
So, Chad.
Yo.
In the current Sunday game, there's an issue that's been brought up, which has led to a broader question.
Yeah.
And the broader question is, where do you draw the line at ancillary stuff in a role-playing game? Now, let me give an obvious example. But then we're going to work into some less obvious examples. The obvious example, when you're playing whatever
game. If you don't
game,
have 50 feet of rope, you're not playing D&D.
If you're playing Battletech.
Damn right, baby.
I knew you would agree to that.
Nobody generally has to declare, I'm going to the bathroom. Okay, you don't have a bowel meter that keeps ticking upward once per right. round and eventually has to be released. You just presume your guy's eating, your guy's going to the bathroom. It might come up if you say I'm doing a 24-hour stakeout.
Yeah, you have like,
might feel like okay,
you have a urine to sound completely disgusting, you have a urine pool on your character.
Yeah, or it's
like, none of that will happen if you play the Jack Bauer 24 RPG. You never have to go to the
they
bathroom.
They do duck out to go to the bathroom every once in a while.
But usually they go to the bathroom to piss and then kill a terrorist.
Well, that's
or they go to the bathroom during commercial breaks.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You can just have the NASA/Disney World version and just say everyone is wearing a diaper always.
That brings up a question. I don't watch 24. Do, you know, as you're watching the episode, they're counting down the time.
Yeah. Correct.
Even the nanosecond or the half seconds or whatever.
Yes.
When they break to commercial, does that clock pause or is it still
no.
running?
The
no,
clock
it's still
continues
running.
To run.
Really?
And if you watch the show carefully, you'll see the writers are actually very good when they do this, because what they'll do is they'll use the commercial breaks for a lot of the time when they're driving on the highway, when they have yes. to go to another location. So they work it so that when the brakes come up, the guys are on the road, and so by the time the break is over, maybe about 2 minutes into the next segment, that's when they show up. So it works out. It works
cool.
out very well.
They always have multiple scenes running, and whenever they go to or come from commercials, they'll run like four screens at once. So you just get reassessed of where everyone is, and then
yes.
they'll zoom in on one.
Yeah.
But here's the RPG question.
No, I want to talk about TV.
Right. Where do you draw the line with that in your RPG? Because Chad, for example, in our current RPG,
right.
one of the things that has changed in our group over the years as our group has evolved is when we first started playing RPGs, we were very, very anal about mm-hmm. keeping records with the money. That when
well,
the game
money
starts,
and equipment.
Yeah,
too.
Money
I
and
mean,
equipment.
If you had a piece of string in your pocket, you especially wanted us to write it down.
Yeah, you had a gun, you had to track your ammo. Ugh. Nowadays, when we do character creation, for the most part, we're just like, look.
Do you want to know what's on my character sheet right now as far as equipment goes?
Monostat.
I have, well, we're, no. As far as equipment goes, I don't have a weapon because my character's a pacifist, and I have a bug-out bag. That's what I have written there, bug-out bag. And it is just the camping bag because we're traveling, and it just is assumed that it has general camping supplies in there.
But the point being that mm-hmm. you don't have written down
have
your specific
no clue
gear.
What's in that.
We went through no process of saying, this character starts with 3d6 times $100, and here's how yeah. we're going to spend them, and here's the
God
chart.
That saves so much time on character creation when you forget about all that crap.
But here's the question, though.
Mm-hmm.
Because in our current game,
yeah.
you took the disadvantage of poverty.
Yes, I did.
Okay, yeah, and you said
we don't have money.
We just don't consider money. Now, I want to back up just a little bit just to say, because people are going to be going ape on this, going, oh my God, you can't do that.
Yes, we can.
This can't stop me. No,
from doing it.
I know
we
you
live
can.
In America.
Hey, just shut up. I'm talking.
Sorry.
Thank you. Just to say, this is the campaign that we're doing. We're doing the rotating GM, and it is a high fantasy game.
Oh,
so
yeah.
There's some differences than just this too. Is not just your normal, you know, like your conventional role playing game where you've got mm-hmm. you know the same GM. So it's a little different in that. But that being said, like what we were saying at dinner, I think it's a matter of like you're saying we've sort of matured, and there's a certain level of comfort right. around the table.
There
where,
is and oh what my you know God is, trust
and right and you know that like use not using the money. Mm-hmm. On one hand is okay because I think, you know, most of the players around the table are not going to try to do something right. ridiculous, like say, oh, well, you know, I'm going to just all of a sudden I have this thing that would really cost me hundreds of gold or something. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a trust level, anything. Yeah. But now back to what you were saying, Dan, is the whole greed thing.
No, it's not.
This is the
poverty.
Interesting. So, I'm sorry, the poverty thing. So we have established this. We've got a system where no one has any money because we're just not bothering with it. But right. we've got the whole edges and hindrances thing going for character mm-hmm. creation. And Chad, you took
poverty.
So what you're saying is you're a min-maxer.
You know, sounds like it to me.
Yeah, I actually did min-max this character quite a bit. I'm the group healer. I'm the cleric, and I'm a super healer. And I took some massive disadvantages to get some really mediocre spellcasting abilities, but that's a different story.
We'll get to in a minute. Yeah,
that's a totally different story. But I raised it up to mediocre. Yeah, I took pacifist and I took poverty. And the thing was brought up where we don't use money, we're not really dealing with money. So you took a disadvantage that doesn't have any purpose within the game. And so it's like a free disadvantage. And I totally see where you're coming from. Logically, the statement you're saying is correct, but it's not playing out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it's not is, I can give you an example. It's time for a gaming story. My character wanted to send back a letter. He was like two towns away from the capital where his order was, and he wanted to send back a letter of something that was he thought rather important, and he needed to write it out, and he needed to send it as a messenger. I borrowed a piece of paper and a pen from the innkeeper, and I didn't have any money for a messenger. And so I did a little sidebar with Pat, who wasn't running the game at the time. And I'm like, you know, I'm really embarrassed about this. I need to send this letter back. You're a wealthy individual. I have nothing. You know, I have no money. I barely have food to feed myself. Can I borrow some money? And in fact, I don't even want you to give me the money. Could you pay someone to deliver this letter mm-hmm. for me? And if I ever receive any money for whatever reasons, which I don't think I ever will, I'll gladly give you the payment back. And your character was very great. You're snobby, but you're also very gracious. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, of course. And it's a way for you to show off your snobbiness. Of course, you know, don't even worry about it. I'll pay this. And we're friends, and that's no problem. It's a pittance. And then my character was able to role play back. We were able to role play that back and forth. It was an interesting scene. And then my character was like, well, listen, I really feel like I owe you something because you're doing this kindness for me. And my character has an apothecary skill, you know, very original, the healer apothecary, but in a fantasy game. And so I'm like, I will make you a potion
mm-hmm.
or I will make you some medicine to help you. And his character is sort of a high charisma, a little bit of a ladies man, you know, sort of noble-esque guy. So basically, I went out into the forest, I made some rolls and gathered some herbs, and I made him
a little purple potion. A
little bit of last all night long potion.
Uh-huh.
And
Biba.
Anyway, you know, obviously this had absolutely no combat effects or anything like that, but it was fun.
I don't know. I might use in combat.
You never know.
Yeah.
It created this great role-playing situation where we were actually able to pull the rules into role-playing into mm-hmm. something that wasn't combat-oriented. And I have the disadvantage on my character sheet. If you've noticed, all the weeks that we've played this game, my character has not bought a single thing.
Yes.
I have never paid for anything because I view it as, even if someone were to give my character lots of money in-game for some reason, within hours, your character could come up to me and say, Chad, where's all that money they gave you? It's like, we need to buy horses to get away, and it's an emergency. And I'll start role-playing it out where I'm starting to feel my pockets going, I just don't know where it went, guys. Mm-hmm. And, yeah,
and I will say this. I think you have done a very good job at role-playing your hindrance, you know, mm-hmm. your poverty.
Yeah.
I think what you have to be careful with, though, is, you know, in your case, you've done it well. You've mm-hmm. played it out, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Considering we don't have, considering we essentially don't have currency, though, mm-hmm. I think that's where you see the problems. Like, well, yeah. we don't have currency, so this really, you know, unless you're going to play it like you've done, then it's really meaningless. Mm-hmm. So I think in those instances, it's probably going to be more up to, say, the GM to yeah. keep track of that. Like, if you've got a player, I took this, but then it never comes up because, you know, you don't ever, it does, if it would just not come up at all, then it is a valid
yeah. from a numbers,
you don't
rules.
Have, you're not actually getting a negative yeah. from having taken.
And you got positive numbers on the other end of it in exchange totally. For this, didn't you? Okay, totally. Well, that's where it becomes.
Well, and
right.
from a numbers rule standpoint, yeah, I see where everybody's yeah. coming from on the argument. But on the other hand, beyond just role playing, too, we're playing a system where we get poker chips. You know, we get rewards for role playing.
Yeah.
We can use the poker chips to buy dice, but we can also use them to do plot things as well mm-hmm. to where something happens in a plot, you can spend a certain number of poker chips and get a slight alteration to that and do different interesting things with it. Well, one of the things that the game master can do is if you have a hindrance, like Pat can fly into rages. Mm-hmm. And what I did to him when it was my week is that they were all hunkered down and they didn't want to attack the guards. And I put down a poker chip and I said, Pat, you get all pissed off. You attack guard. If you do that, you take the poker chip.
Uh-huh.
And you said, no, I don't want to do that. So I put two on there, and you had to bribe me with a poker chip.
Yeah.
You had to say, okay, out of my stash, I'm putting one on the table and say, no, I'm not doing it. I put two on the table, and you're like, you know, I'll get two. It will be kind of fun. I can pay it off. But no, I choose not to. So, yeah, I will take the poker chips you put on the table and go with it.
Mm-hmm.
A GM can totally do that to me, and I fully expect it. If I ever go up to a merchant or if I have in a situation where I must do a currency transaction or even a trade, even a barter trade where I have the item and I'm trading it, I totally expect the GM to throw down a poker chip and say, okay, the potion you made to trade to that guy for the horses that you will take to get away from being eaten by the dragon, you've misplaced the potion. It's like, do you want to take that poker chip and play that out, or do you want to buy that off with your poker chip?
Mm.
And you know what? I will totally take the poker chip and play that out, because that would be so cool.
Well, sure. The one thing I'd point out, though, is that this system, by its structure, borrowing heavily from Spirit of the Century and such, allows for that kind of thing. But not every system does.
Correct.
If we were playing D&D, where you just have gold pieces, silver pieces, whatever, then I would feel more compelled to track something like that, particularly, and I don't know the D&D off the top of my head even has something like this, but if you took some kind of penalty of poverty or whatever.
It really doesn't.
I totally agree with you. Maybe the D&D example doesn't apply.
Yeah, maybe D&D is a bad choice. But
if the game is a tactical game of in nature, if
well,
that scale,
I wouldn't say tactical. I would say if it's tactical on that resource. See, as I was trying to come up with a sort of a measure for this, I came up with this. I would look at the priorities of the game and the priorities of the moment. For example, priorities of the game. In a game like Battletech, I am not going to make you keep track of your food.
Right.
It's just presumed you've got the rations. But in a game like Skies of Glass, if you're out in the desert where food's yeah. at a premium, I'm going to make you keep track of your food because this is a survival game. That's an integral and important part of the game. Now, I also said priorities of the moment. So, for example, let's go back to Battletech. If you guys in Battletech are stranded in an empty, deserted biodome on some world, then now all of a sudden counting off the protein bars may become a real issue. And so at this moment, I'm going to start asking you guys to track something that otherwise I wasn't tracking. And in a game like we are playing right now, money really isn't an issue because this is not a heavy transactional game. Heck, I don't know, at least, I mean, I've only been there for one of the sittings because it's been kind of a busy past few weeks for me. But things like shopping and buying and selling really never even came up. Unlike D&D, where in a lot of the games you make the trip back to the town and you go to the great sage or whatever and all of a sudden start trying to peddle off your magical items and buy better ones.
If you're actually playing a certain kind of D&D game with like the regents and stuff like that, one of the characters dies, that diamond that you have to spin to resume is a resource.
Or a Battletech game, if you use the Mercenary's Handbook. Then all of a sudden we start counting the C bills and we start worrying about, okay,
to me that,
can you actually cough up a paycheck?
To me, that falls under a sort of a crunchier tactical game where it has an impact on all these different things. The system we're playing now is very much into the role-playing aspect of it. And I think that you can do a lot of that sort of hand-waving and role-playing.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
No, I don't think so.
In fact, I think that what you're doing now is a clear illustration of the fact that someone with very few resources has character challenges that can be exploited. Someone with very many resources also has character challenges that can be exploited.
Yeah.
Chris, I'm curious to hear your perspective on this. What do you make people track in your games versus what do you assume is just happening?
I'm kind of a middle ground in that aspect. I think a lot of it depends on the group. You know, a group like Chad's spent describing, that's a group where there is a definite level of trust. You guys have talked about that. And so you can, yeah, kind of wave your hand at that or say, yeah, you probably got that. You probably got that. But when it's a group, when there's like newer players, like my son's group that I'm running him and his friends through right now.
Yeah. Teenagers. That's a whole different ballgame.
It is. But you know, and taking that out of the equation for a minute, the fact that they're new players, yeah, I am going to have them keep track of equipment because what I want to do is I want to put them in situations where, ooh, they need that 50 feet of rope. You know, and suddenly now, oh my gosh, we don't have it. As opposed to saying, yeah, you guys probably had rope. No, they don't have it. So now we've got to, you know, train their brains to think creatively as how they can get around that obstacle now because they don't have the rope.
Yeah.
So, and it varies from time to time. Like when they go wandering out of a town into the wilderness, yeah, they do take the time on their own actually to make sure they have enough food. But there's been times when it's been like, yeah, never mind. You know, yeah, you guys are probably doing okay. You know, we don't really worry about that level of detail to it. So for me, really, I kind of base mine depending upon what the makeup of the group is. If it is a bunch of veterans that I'm playing with, then, yep, there's a lot of assumptions there, and I'll let it go. The place where I kind of draw the line with that, I think, on any case, is if you get down into, you know, certain esoteric items. And not even the stuff that's really out there. You know, to stick with the D&D, for example. Like, if it's a Thunderstone or something like that, yes, you'd have to have that on your character sheet. But I'm even talking about things like a piece of chalk. You know, something that really, when you need it, you know, you should have it. That kind of thing. I'll actually, you know, make sure that they have that kind of thing. Because usually when that kind of situation comes up, it's a critical element in the game. And you can have a lot of fun with it if they don't have it. As opposed to if they did, you can have some pretty good playtime after that. You know,
that's something else I was going to point out. Is that the more things you keep track of, obviously, this increases the paperwork. It increases some of the pedantic aspects of the game. But conversely, this does allow you also to create some situations. I remember when they were first working out the details for the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies, there was a lot of people that were really upset about the fact that he had the organic web shooters as opposed to the mechanical ones. And looking on a particular forum, it was not ours. One of the things that people were bitching about is they thought in the comic book some of the more interesting situations that Spider-Man got himself into was when he ran out of web fluid. And it, just as an example within, you know, let's just keep running with D&D.
And shouldn't that webbing come out of his butt?
Well,
or why his
just
wrist?
Above his butt.
Yeah.
But it makes swinging really interesting.
What's this goop coming out of Peter's room? It's sticky. I mean, I'm sure you guys have all seen that comic online. Aunt May with semen all over her hands, essentially.
If not, superdickery.com. Yeah. It's a hysterical site. But anyway, for example, let's say we're playing D&D and we play it in our current structure of as long as it's common sense, I'll assume you have it versus you have to keep track of it. And the you have to keep track of it version, you can create a situation where people have to put their heads together because suddenly the hole that they're in or the chasm they have to cross is 110 feet. And now all of a sudden they've got to start trying to figure out.
Well, you know what that comes into? That's the, does the game master want them to cross it? Because it doesn't matter what they have written down on the character sheet. Because the game master, if he doesn't want them to cross it, he'll look at that chasm and go, okay, everybody has 60
feet. Well, there's another shade of gray there. There is, does the game master want them to cross it, but want them to work for it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
That's what I'm saying. it's not intended as a Game Master cheap shot, but more...
It can be.
But it's more that, and maybe that was kind of a weak example, but my point,
that's a good example because it can create dramatic tension. It's like, okay, you're 110 feet of crash, you've got 100 feet of rope. Well, there's this 15 feet of rope here that's been lying in this cavern for a good 20 years. Looks a little frayed. Looks like we're going to have to use it.
It's a now trap.
Then Akbar comes out of the wall and says, it's a trap. But no, then you've got then some you dramatic tension with either dice rolls or other creative things that go on there. And yeah, sure. And the DM actually may want them to cross it. He just wants to make it an exciting moment for everybody.
I still have my Akbar from Gen Con 2007, and I would have it when I was GMing Star Wars at the end of college there. When there was a trap, they would know.
So here's a question for you guys. We've been talking a lot about money and rope and very practical.
That's all there is in D&D.
Yeah. And chalk and torches. Torches. When I first started playing D&D, torches were the big ones.
And Greek flame. And
hammers
ion
and pitons. Or pitons.
But here's my question for you. Where do you draw the line? What is the maximum amount of gear, stuff, resources that you just hand wave on the characters? And it doesn't even have to be resources, like bathrooms, lunches, food. Is your maximum, if it does damage or stops damage, you put that on the sheet? If not, I don't care what you do with it. Or do you go all the way down?
The goal of the game is survive in the nuclear desert. I want to know how many bottles of water you have. If it's go kill the dragon because you're all level 20 D&D characters.
Let me ask you this.
I don't care if you're swimming in gold because you all are at that point.
Well, how much do you drill down? You're in the desert and it's a wasteland and it's whatever. You have 6 bottles of water. Are they metal bottles or plastic bottles? Because that makes a difference. Is it fresh water or not fresh water? Do you have caps? How you stop? I mean, you can really, really drill down. How far do you drill down with this?
Here's the approach that I like to think of it as, and it kind of goes back to what sort of the point that Chris was saying, but I think it goes beyond just dealing with younger gamers or newer gamers, let's put it that way. I think it goes to say to the setting. Say if you're starting off a new campaign that has some longevity, I think when you first start it, maybe you're a little bit more careful with what you have and what you write down and the money, giving out the money and everything like that. You keep track of it better. But as time goes on, and if let's say you're into this campaign now for a year or two and your characters have advanced and matured, whatever else like that, I think then you can sort of start to get more lax on it. At least that's the way it has been for me, because just like in any game, I mean, after you've been playing for a while, certain things don't matter anymore, like money. I mean, you get so much money in games, in any kind of games, role-playing, and in some D&D cases, that it doesn't really matter anymore.
What's the weight of the coins you're carrying, and what is your strength?
Don't get me started on encumbrance.
Oh, my gosh. Really? Encumbrance was probably some of the worst rules ever created.
Oh, I hate it. I'm playing Fallout 3 right now, and that's the worst part of the game is the damned encumbrance. I hate the fact that I have to pause every 5 minutes to run home and dump my crap.
When I run a game, honestly, as a game master, I don't care about the gear that the players have. I mean, if a player wants it and it's within reason of their character, and when I say within reason, I'm talking like, okay, we're playing a very high fantasy sort of dragon save the maiden sort of thing, and the character is wanting a chainsaw and a powered armor that's just nowhere in the setting or in the game, and they're just being like, that's just what, I say no to that. But if a character wants something, I give it to them. If a character comes to me and they say, well, I want a rocket launcher, and here is the totally legitimate, rational reason why I should have a rocket launcher, and it does fit within the game that you're running and the setting and the story we all want, who am I to stop them? I don't care. You know, I'll give them the +5 Holy Avenger. I'll give them all that if it makes them feel special and if it's what they want. So if I'm giving them all of this stuff, I don't care if they have 3 pieces of chalk or 4 pieces of chalk. I don't care if they have 50 feet of rope or 20 feet of rope.
Well, I'm going to take a little bit of an issue with that. It's fine that you're letting them have it, but what you're talking about is in advance. They come to you beforehand and say, I want a rocket launcher. Sure. I want to have this. Conversely, this is more like what Chris was saying, and I agree with him. What you have to avoid is you get into the situation where they're in dire straits, and then all of a sudden the character goes, I whip out my rocket launcher now. And you're like, what are you talking about? Oh, well, I, obviously well, would have. I would obviously have a rocket launcher. That's more the situation I think we're talking about here.
I don't think
if
it's
you
a
give it to them beforehand, it's one thing as opposed to, or even the simple
because
example like
bad.
What Chris is saying.
That's
if,
bad.
If chalk
playing.
Will get you out of if the chalk is an essential part of get, yeah. Of doing something that would get you out of it, and they figure that out, and they're like, oh, okay, I've got chalk. Well. Did they really have chalk? I remember in role playing, when do you actually go through the list? Do you buy chalk? What the hell do you want chalk for?
I do.
And yes,
I
yeah,
do.
Well,
I
actually,
write it down.
I do too. I learned my lesson because, yeah, so I buy chalk on my characters, but newer players won't. So well, you don't just say, okay, you can have chalk. So that's what Chris is getting at. And I agree with him on that.
I
and that's
see,
the kind of what you're saying because you're saying yeah. beforehand. And I agree. That's cool. If you yeah. say, I don't care what you have, as long as you establish it beforehand, yeah.
well,
not
and,
just try to
you know,
pull it out of your
even,
ass when you really need it.
Even if we don't want to, even if we're playing a hand-waving game, I try not to make my games about stuff. And if there's Deus Ex Machina that's going to save the day where Batman whips out the bat shark repellent when he's being surrounded by sharks, I have to say I want to be the one to tell the players, like, you have the bat shark repellent. But you have to make an argument with me.
Mm-hmm.
If you say, okay, I... Chalk is going to save the day, and chalk is a who cares, who has it sort of thing, right? And chalk is going to save the day, and a character is like, I don't know, do we have chalk? I don't know. Yes, I have chalk. I will look at the guy and say, listen, why does your character have chalk? Because, and it doesn't have to be a long, involved debate. If the person can say at least some consistent, logical, thought-out reason why his stabby thief blood-curdling maniac carries a 3-inch piece of unbroken chalk through the wasteland after getting beat up by 20 thugs, and why this chalk is in pristine condition, if he can make that argument to me, more power to him, and add that to your character. Because to me, that gets them thinking about their character, and I want them thinking about their character more than I want
yeah.
the dramatic tension necessarily.
But that expands what they have from what they do have to anything they possibly could have. I mean, you sort of give them a little black bag of anything well, they can argue for.
Yeah, well, if that they think that they need that to make their character better, who am I to say no?
Well,
I don't care if they have
I don't say
it.
No. I just say pick it up beforehand.
I agree with Chad, but I agree with Chad. He is absolutely right. In that, I think it's great to get people thinking about their characters. And typically speaking, within my games, if you can make a case for it, it doesn't totally violate the suspension of disbelief. I'll just go ahead and say you have
And
it.
If a 3-inch piece of chalk is going to completely
you know
destroy
again,
the dramatic tension of my game.
We're fixating on chalk
well,
like
on.
We fixate
let
on things.
Finish.
It's not chalk. It's
Let me finish the point. So, for example, we're playing a sci-fi game, and someone will say to me,
I have chalk.
I take out a picture.
Make me get the sausages.
You know, I'm talking to some guy, and we're talking about our days back in the academy. I take out the hollow picture of my graduating class. I'm not going to grab his character sheet to make sure it's on there. You know, I'm just going to say, it's reasonable that you carry that in your sci-fi wallet or whatever, and it's not a big deal. But I try to draw the line at anything that either one has stats, guns and armor.
I can totally understand
or two
that.
Is a bit too convenient.
Yeah.
For example, some guys like, I'll only let you pass if you have a picture of your mom. You're like, here's my picture of my mom.
Yeah. Like, why wouldn't I have a picture of my mom? My character loves her mom.
She's
it's
my
like,
mom.
I have to draw a line.
It's like, come on.
I have to draw
Mother
a line
a
for this
friend.
Reason.
That's right.
One of the things that I have learned in the course of role-playing is I'm very, very transfixed on fairness for everybody. And one of the just simple facts of role playing is some people at the table, and I'm not talking the characters, I'm talking the players, are smarter
now,
than others.
I want you to explain real quick, because people are going to come back on you. There's a difference between fairness and balance. So there, an example that's going on our forums right now that's being debated a little bit is you're playing a role playing game and someone wants to play a United States Marine Corps advanced sniper with years of experience. And someone else wants to play a barista at Starbucks. And the setting allows both characters to be in the same party, and it's great. Should those two have the same level of abilities?
Yeah.
Should they be able to do the same thing?
And I guess if they are in the party together, realistically, that's fair but not balanced.
Obviously.
And if the barista can kill people at 2,000 yards range, then that's balanced.
Well, there are ways you can connect. You can make this up. The barista has a social net, and the Marine doesn't because he's been in Afghanistan.
But here's my point, without chasing that rabbit. Here's my point.
Do they even have to be balanced that low? That's a whole new episode.
Maybe so.
I don't think.
But for this episode,
I don't think they do either. And I take the wimp, so I get away with it.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to the chalk, people.
Fine.
Oh, so this chalk, 3 inches.
Jesus.
Unbroken.
But my point being that the simple fact is that some people at the table are better BSers and better storytellers than others. And so at some point, you know, I want the people, you're absolutely right, Chad, that I want the people to think about their characters. I don't want everyone to have 3 pages of equipment because they have to list their pocket lint.
And I've seen you do this, and this is how I would do it, is you're right. Some people are better BS, some people are better thinking on their feet. Show me a picture of your mother. And the guy's like, duh, duh, duh. And as a game master, you could say, the guy would have it. He's struggling. I want him to succeed at this anyway. You know, kind of lean over to him. It's like, it's in your wallet.
Yeah, and so I'll just kind of, I try to weigh it internally.
Yeah.
How believable is this? And how too convenient is this?
Right.
And if it passes a general baloney detector test in my mind.
Because that's all this is. It's just suspension of disbelief. That's all it is.
And that's where I'm curious if Chris...
Nobody carries chalk in their pocket. Nobody did. Nobody in the Middle Ages carried chalk in their pockets. I'm
an 8-year-old
sorry.
Girl would.
I don't even know that.
A demon summoner guy would.
But a demon summoner
woman
would.
Might.
Here's where my question is for Chris.
So hers delicious around the third trimester, Pat.
They eat chalk. That's one thing. That's why I said it.
What
that's one of the things they say in the little you know mother's guides. You get these weird cravings, and they say some of the ones to worry about is if you eat laundry detergent or chalk.
Why the hell would you eat laundry detergent?
Apparently, there's some kind of a it's a disorder. I'm not sure what it's called, but it's one of the things to look out for. Like if you have a really weird craving for chalk or like laundry detergent,
did a woman in 13th century
have it right, man? Yeah. Just put them in a petri dish.
I have to think with the chalk, it has something to do with like a calcium.
I wonder if a pregnant woman in
the 13th
century hungry ate laundry detergent. Oh wait, she didn't. Because it wasn't there, but...
Well, no, she would be eating the stones that she'd beat her clothes against.
But I think we can all agree...
soap is the yardstick of civilization.
That there is some point where this is just baloney detector.
Yes.
And
yes.
Chad is probably going to be on the far extreme of... I could probably play a Chad game and not even have an equipment list of any kind.
Listen, the only reason why my players have character sheets is because it makes them feel better.
But Chris, I am willing to wager... that you are on the opposite extreme and probably would make your characters write down more than even I would. And I'm curious if that's true. And if so, how far do you take
Let me
that?
Tell you, Dan makes us... Back in the day, Dan had us write down everything. We had to have blank pieces of paper to write down. Like, you couldn't say, I have a pin. You have to say the color of the pin and how many pins you have.
This is also like 12 years ago.
Yeah, this is also when we were a teenager.
I don't know. You know what? He was carrying an entire blank notebook to dinner tonight.
The answer to your question is, Dan, I would say it's a pretty fair wager. Yes, I would definitely, and I can't think of any instance where I never had them write down what they've got. Now, as far as how far do I drill down, no, they don't have to write down the length of the piece of chalk, nor the circumference, nor the color. but if you got chalk, write it down. You
is
know,
it veiny?
And then because I mean, you took the time to look over the equipment list and shop in ye old general store. So you might as well write it down. And it's the same thing. You know, granted, like for example, one of the things I've always done traditionally for myself whenever I made a character is he always takes 3 sacks. Okay, now, okay, we find
3 amateur.
Now, listen to me.
Some people do just fine with 1 sack.
But wait now. But of course, I'm figuring the rest of the party's got their sack. Now, granted, we find,
so you're 75,000
gold in the Dragon Horde. There's no way that's going to fit in 3 sacks, but somehow we still walk away with all of it. Something like that is more representative of the fact that I have something to carry extra gear in. You know what? I have a backpack. I have no idea how big this backpack is. Even if I'm playing a wizard, I got a backpack. Spellbook, probably odds are it's going to go in the backpack. But yet, for some reason, I can still fit my rations in there. I can still fit my hammer in there. I can still fit my 10-foot pole in there. But it's representative of the fact that I have something to carry things with me.
if my players came to me and they said that they get a kick out of making these lists of all the different stuff they had, or if they said, well, I want to make a list of my equipment, but we don't have like D&D, the equipment list sucks. It's all Bill Gizmere's till your eyes bleed. And, you know, I want to write down all this fantasy stuff because I'm a fantasy buff and I'm a costumer and I know all the little bits and pieces and I want to write that down and say, oh, by all means, do that. And then if everybody is into that, then I am totally down with holding everyone to their equipment. Say, I whip out a candle. It's like, you didn't have a candle last week when you were in the dark. Is that on your equipment list? Like, oh, no, it isn't. Like, okay, I don't whip out a candle. And, you know, we have to play it from there. That's really cool. We've talked about doing this way, way, way back in the day with Dan with his obsessive equipment list requirements of playing a game and taking a modern game or even a futuristic game and taking a Sears Roebuck catalog, and your characters get a dollar amount and they have to shop through the catalog to buy what they want.
I would never get past the lingerie section.
But you would get what you want.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I would still leave unfulfilled.
Get that naughty nightwear.
It's just paper.
Chris goes last.
I'd give the catalog to that guy last. Chad, I have to say, you know, what you have described, really... For someone like me, I could get behind that. I could do that, and I could probably even enjoy it, because it seems to me, even though you're willing to say, yeah, don't write anything down, you know, whatever, but you have created essentially your own system for policing that, which I think would be my biggest problem with that, where you don't necessarily allow them to just say, voila, here's what I've got. Yeah. They have to justify it at any point in time during the game. And that, to me, helps to, you know, that essentially eases my list-minded mind.
And you do two things with it, too. It's like, one is Game Master, it's like every time they pull a noun out of their pocket, you don't make them justify, because that would get tedious and boring. But you have it serve a dual purpose. If it's something odd, interesting, different, weird, make them justify it. Make them tie it into their character. Your character creation should not end when you roll up your character and do your write-up. Your character should be changing and evolving. Or if it's not changing and evolving and it's being stagnant for a reason. And there's a story behind that. And I think that that's what one of the main goals of a role-playing game is for players to explore their characters. And if you could do any sort of in-game thing to get them thinking about their characters and the who's and the what's and the why's and the motivations and the stories behind it, it creates a better game for them.
I agree. It does do that. I mean, that there's, you know, 1,000 ways to get players to think about their characters, but that, I admit, is a very unique way to do that. I applaud you.
Thank you.
The only caveat I would go back to, and we'll leave this as a closing thought, is just to be fair to the fact that not everyone at the table is a good BSer. Chad, back in the day, you and I had a saying we used between ourselves, and this was in reference to our own abuses.
Yeah.
Anything can be explained.
That's right.
No matter how absurd, you give me long enough, we will come up with something that at least sounds passable as an explanation for why the Middle Ages knight has a carafe of orange juice.
Right.
And
if the game master goes into that knowing that, and he always retains the right to veto because it sets off the BS detector.
Yeah, you guys wouldn't like me because I would veto like everything.
Then we wouldn't have anything, and I would play it as that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd just roll with that. That would be fun for me because I don't have to have anything in a game like that. It's the story.
I would be curious, though, to see how that method really works with a group of new players. I would have to imagine it would be very, very difficult for them to, because they're trying to wrap their minds around what they're doing to begin with, and then to now have to add that additional level. I think it would be difficult.
If I had a group of nothing but absolutely new players that I was training up, I would run a more traditional role. I wouldn't do a D&D dungeon crawl because I don't want to teach people how to do it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't do something esoteric or advanced or really off the wall. But yeah, I would want them to do I would want them to roll up a character. I want them to do an equipment list because you want to teach them.
Yeah, you want
first off that
they need
that
the structure.
They have stuff. and that it's a resource to be drawn on. And then when they learn that skill, when you play different games down the road, they understand that the character has resources, and the resources add to the believability of the game. And so you can role play that out without hard and fast rules, and you can role play out the limitedness of your resources and incorporate that into very fun gameplay.
So, Chad, ultimately you're talking about communist gaming, or would that be socialist gaming? Because you're cashless.
Tomato,
tomato. You know, I think that it would be fun gaming myself. I don't know. I got nothing.
I got nothing.
Great. Then we'll just hold the rest of it. I got some notes here. Looks like we're already set up for a second episode. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
See you later.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.